Welcome to Acorn to Oak with Penny Quayle Pierce and co-host Matthew Donaghy. Within each acorn, there is the DNA that strives to be a mighty oak tree. All it needs to reach its potential for greatness is to be activated. You are the acorn. On this show, we will share with you the tools and guidance you need to grow into the person you are meant to be. And now your host, Penny Quayle Pierce and co-host Matthew Donaghy.
Hi, good evening. It's obviously it's Penny, and just welcoming you to the show tonight. Hope you're doing well on this Thursday, and I'll just hand over to Matthew so he can say hi, and then we'll get on with the subject of this evening.
Good evening, everybody, or good afternoon, depending on where you're listening from. Really looking forward to tonight's show. I hope you're all well. Strap in, because it's a good one.
Yeah, it's always the way. It's like lock them and load. So,
yes.
We're discussing tonight quite an emotive subject, and especially if you know somebody who has autism or is on the autism spectrum disorder, ASD. And basically, this refers to a broad range of conditions challenged by social skills, repetitive behaviour, speech and non-verbal communication. And as the write-up for the show said, you know, according to the Centre of Disease Control, autism affects basically an estimated 1 in 59 children in both the United States and the UK today. We know that there's not one autism, but many sub-types. Some of them are influenced by genetics and environmental factors. Because autism is a spectrum disorder, each person with autism has a distinct set of strengths and challenges. The ways in which people with autism learn, think, problem solve can range from being highly skilled to severely challenged. And some people with ASD require significant support in their daily lives, while others may need less support and in some cases can live entirely independently. Several factors may influence the development of autism, and it is often accompanied with sensory sensitivities and medical issues such as gastrointestinal problems and disorders, seizures, sleep disorders, as well as mental health challenges such as anxiety, depression, and attention issues. So, you know, it, as I said, it's a broad pathology. And, you know, some of it, as I was saying, can be very slight in nature, and some of it can be quite severe. And depending on the person who is suffering from autism, depends on whether they can live entirely independently or not. And, you know, one of the things I want to make very, very clear at the beginning of the radio show is we're not setting ourselves up as experts here. We're talking about a subject which can be incredibly emotive if you have a family member who is suffering from this disorder. And therefore, I would never want you to feel that we're trying to tell you how you deal with this situation. You know, you get as much help as you feel that you need at any one time. But it's also important to realise that, you know, the broader you can bring in, or the more experts that you can bring in, and therefore getting a lot of different ideas and input to help you dealing with people who have this condition is really, really important. And I would say she never shut the door on anything, because it just may be the one thing that resonates with the person who has autism and can help them to such a degree where their life experience evolves and expands. So I just wanted to hand over to Matthew for a quick few minutes so that he can give you his take on what we're talking about this evening.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody.
Yes, I'm here. I hope you can hear me. And yeah, I think it's a real interesting subject. I mean, I'm not a medical professional myself. However, I have had a lot of years in emotional intelligence, obviously using Breath for Life breath work and working on an emotional level. And when looking at any sort of disorder or disease, the key for me is in the words that they use. So autism would broadly be described as a developmental disorder. For me, I'd like to sort of flip the words around and say, because a developmental disorder, it sounds like there's something wrong with them. And I think that's key to what a few of my clients have said is the hardest thing to deal with, is not the autism itself or the Asperger's itself, but the sort of trauma they've had dealing with everybody making them feel special, but not in a good way. When I was younger, a lot of people would use the term, oh, they're special. And I think it's actually pretty degrading for the person that's got something that they probably try and struggle to understand themselves. And actually, they're made to feel bad and that there's something wrong with them and they're not like other kids. And to a certain extent, that's true. But when there's some negative sort of emotions felt around that, I don't feel it's helpful for them. So going back to the word disorder, I'd like to flip it around and say that it's a disorder within the developmental stages, or how they've developed. I've worked with a few autistic children, and a couple of adults that also have Asperger's. And what's incredible, or what I've found, is in so many ways they seem actually far more capable and intelligent than perhaps myself in certain areas, and their imagination and the way they can visualize things that we can't is, in a way, I think it's almost like a superpower, because in many ways they could use more of their brain and have a greater concept of what's going on. I know one of the traits within autism is they see things very, very black and white. And in very many ways, that can be an absolutely fantastic tool to have, especially in business, or if you're trying to achieve something in a design sort of way. You don't get stuck in the details. You just see the end goals and the achievements. But in other ways, they may find on a social level, they find it hard to express themselves, and. On that side of things, I think it's the reason they find it so difficult is because it's, for me, it's like there's this big deal made about it. It's like we have to mollycoddle them. I don't know if you have that expression in America, but it's like wrap them up in cotton wool. Oh, bless. There's something not quite right with them. We need to look after them. And actually, I think that's actually part of the bit. Of it that can be damaging to that child, because they're constantly telling themselves that there's something wrong with them, or they don't understand, and oh, it's because of whatever they've been told by the doctor they have. And that for me is where the work I do comes into it, because it's undoing that and making making them realise that actually, yes, they may have autism, but actually they can be just as successful, just as social, and have all the great experiences that they dream of having. Whereas I think a lot of people sort of almost tell them that they can't. It's what I don't like about sort of the labels, so to speak.
I agree. I think labels can be very, very damaging. And, you know, the trouble is nowadays is that, you know, some of the, you know, especially autism or, you know, the ASD or Asperger's or any of these things are picked up whilst you're in school. It may be the first port of call when some perception problems are picked up, and then they get into the medical model and are driven down until they get a diagnosis, and the diagnosis can then actually turn into like a label that they have to carry with them for the rest of their educational lives and also into everyday life. And, you know, an awful lot of these things are just different perceptions. You know, who are we to say what is normal and what is not? We all do things differently and we perceive things differently. And I think for me very much, you know, I was dyslexic and I am still dyslexic. And one of the things for me was, when in the 1960s, dyslexia wasn't widely known very much. You know, there was a stage where autism or ASD was not recognised for what it is. And it's a perception problem. And one of the things I found when I was growing up was, obviously I couldn't read until I was about 13 or 14. I didn't perceive or understand letters, and I definitely didn't understand how letters were put together to make language. I could speak, but my spelling, I had no idea. I would say, you know, ka-a-ta dog, because I knew it was an animal, but I just didn't know which one it was. And, you know, one of the things when I was moving through my own schooling was, it was not that I was unintelligent. In fact, I was incredibly intelligent. I just didn't have a great connection between my right and left brain. And I was very, very right-brained. I was a visionary. I didn't deal in little things. I dealt in big concepts, and, you know, my spatial awareness was terrific, but I had no sense. I couldn't read a map and tell you how to get there, because that involved reading. But if I had driven it or walked it, I knew it. And it was just a different way of perceiving things. And this is a similar problem, you know, the relationship between autism and ASD and dyslexia is huge. And it is, as I said, it is a perception problem. You know, we perceive, but it takes longer for us to perceive with our left brains. You know, autism, etc., are a very, very, very right brain. Their right brains are incredibly tuned in. And it was really interesting when I was my sister's youngest boy is on that spectrum. And he is an incredible artist, but not just an artist in the traditional sense. He also does a lot of stuff, and, you know, he's just passed his master's in design, and he does a lot of drawing in design, and he's an amazing designer. And, you know, he had to have extra time in his schooling to be able to do the social skills, and because of his repetitive behavior is he had no real sense of time and space. So we always used to call it Edward time. You know, he used to take a long time getting dressed and various other bits and pieces because his mind was taken up with other perceptual things. And it would take him a long time when he learned how to tie his shoes, because he would repeat it I don't know how many times until it was perfect. But, you know, once he actually didn't wear laces in his shoes and he would actually have slip-on shoes, he speeded up a great deal. And it's little things like that. And I know that families who have or raised children with this ASD problems or Asperger's or any type of perception problems have to adjust their whole lives in order to help these children grow in a safe manner without judgment. So, sorry, Matthew, I butted in there. So I'll hand back. I'll hand back to you.
No, that's a really important point, because I think it's not obviously just the child that has to go through the condition. It is the family as well, and there is a lot of adjustment, and especially from a parent's point of view. I mean, there's a lot of evidence will tell you that autism is handed down, it's hereditary, or it can be more on the mother's side. And so I think on a lot of these things, as I'm not a parent myself, but very much parents blame, the first thing a parent would do is almost blame themselves. Oh, is it my fault my child has this? And so there can be some real work to do for the parents as well. And it can be a real traumatic time for the parents, just as much as the children. And we're fast approaching a break, so we'll continue this conversation after the break. Thank you very much.
Your conscious connection to a more mindful world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
I'm Kathy Williams, host of Sexy Mom Abundant Life radio show on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. On the show, we explore living abundantly in every area of your life. Ways to let go of limiting patterns and beliefs and to step into the flow of creativity and possibility, knowing you are supported by the universe.
We are talking about your life. Ever wonder, is this as good as it gets? No, it could be so much better. At Acorn to Oak, we know you are seeking more happiness, joy, unconditional love, financial freedom, passion, and purpose. Find your unique mojo and live an extraordinary life. Want to know more? Contact us at our website, acorntooak.org.uk.
1 in 3 adults has prediabetes. 1 in 3. That means it could be you, your football buddy. Your football buddy. Or you, your best man. Your worst man. You, your dog walker. Your cat jogger. While 1 in 3 adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
for me, it's, you know, the strengths that a child with autism or Asperger's or any of the attention deficit disorders, it's, you know, looking at the strengths, really upping those and getting people to gain confidence with their strengths in order to help them with the challenges that they face. So, you know, as I was talking a little bit earlier on about my nephew, you know, his strengths very much were encouraged so that he would build the confidence and know that challenges were just challenges. They were just different ways of looking at things and helping him to see how he could get over those. And I know that Matthew has got, you know, he works with children in this field, so I wanted to hand back to him so that you could hear some of the cases that he's been dealing with. So Matthew,
yeah, thanks Penny. I think the thing for me that's I love about my job is just being able to help people, and some of the comments that I get from different clients. I mean, one there's well, really, really intelligent, lovely young man. And one of the comments he gave in his feedback from a breath work was, autism to him is like having 100 tabs open on your computer all at one time and being aware of all of them. And even just that explanation of what autism to him really helped me to understand, because, I mean, wow, to be able to cope with your brain working that hard is, from my point of view, quite astounding. Very much as we know and we've explained in other shows, men tend to think of one thing at once and women tend to think of 15 things at once. The concept of thinking about 15 things at once is big enough, let alone 100 things at once. But what he was saying is, after the breath work, it was as if 20 of those tabs had been closed down, which again to me was astounding. How I know I've used breath work myself and with many clients, but just to different people's perception of what's actually happened during that time, and I thought, wow, if you've closed down 20 of those tabs, that's a lot of peace you're feeling right now, as opposed to when they're all open and they're all firing.
Astonishing, just after one breath work. Just
yeah, I mean, I'm sure I'll work with him some more, but the first thing I thought was, imagine what two or three would do. So it's something I'm certainly looking to investigate more on. And there's another chap I've worked with that has autism. He said he's done a few breath works with me now, and I said, if you could take one thing from the sessions that we've done, what's sort of helped you more? And he said, I feel calmer. There's less head stuff going on. So I think a lot of sometimes around, he said, around the social stuff, he's got so much going on in his head, so many questions and thoughts, and not necessarily judgments, but worries of how people may judge him because he feels he's not sort of comfortable in social situations. And something he said to me is, I used to worry about my condition. Now I enjoy that I'm individual and different. And again, it literally, it made my heart sing. It was to be able to get that result and be, and help them in that way was just absolutely stunning. But I think what I found is the people I've worked with, especially the adults actually, is helping them to realize that when they realize that this isn't so, like diseases and conditions, we have a tendency to say, oh, there's something wrong with that person, they have this. And I think it's so damaging because we're all so different. And I mean, you would look at me and think I'm an able-bodied person and I don't necessarily have any conditions. However, that doesn't mean that I'm more capable than anybody else. And I think we see things and people are told things throughout their life, as I referred to earlier. If you're telling a child, when I was at school, we had a class, I think it was called C15 or something. And what we were told is, they're the special kids. And you think that's a really horrible term to use when you're sort of explaining that. And I think when you unfold these years of a person being told that, oh, there's something wrong with you, you're not as capable as most people, you may not have the intelligence of most people, you don't function like most people. These are all such negative statements that they beat a person down. And that's what a couple of the adults have said is so important.
Even to the stage now, I think just the label of being special is actually quite a derogatory term, because people associate being special as having a problem. And that wasn't so when I was growing up, but it was, labeling somebody as special means that, they're out of the ordinary, which an awful lot of people with autism and ASD, it's true, they are out of the ordinary. However, the special label now has become passé, and is totally out of date. It's the same as saying people, oh, you've got special needs. I mean, I worked in education for a while with special needs adults, and they were hugely special to me. They were outstanding people with a completely different take on how the world ran and the universe. And they taught me so much that I must admit, I got to the stage of hating that term special, because they weren't special, they were extraordinary. And that's the point. They were extraordinary. They had a totally different take on things. They got you out of the narrow thinking that you may have as a normal adult. And again, who is the person who actually decides what normal is? If I had my way, I would be extraordinary all the time. And, as I said, they have incredible strengths that we don't even begin to understand. And yes, they have some challenges with perception. But then, I think in my own life experience, back in 2014, I had a left-sided stroke, which took out the right side of my body. And it took out my speech centres, and it took out a lot of cognitive awareness, because it was a cascade stroke. It took out 50% of my brain. And it took a fair amount of time to rewire my brain and actually get back to being normal, or what people would say was 100% recovery. And during that time, I did a lot of different work in cognitive processes and began to understand, the difference, like layers of awareness and layers of consciousness. And it is astonishing, these people with autism and ASD can teach us so much, and can teach medical science so much on how their perceptions work and how you can use different parts of your mind and your brain, and how you can rewire it in order to gain a grip on the reality that's happening in front of us right here, right now. But, you know, some of these people are superb at living in the present, living in the moment, not worrying too much about what they're going to do in the future. In fact, some, obviously, some autistic children and adults do get fixated with what's going to happen in the future. But an awful lot of them don't. And it depends on what their strengths are and what their challenges are. But I was fascinated when Matthew started working with autistic adults and children, because the way they describe it gives us a huge insight to how we can help them. So handing back to Matthew again.
Yeah, and I think that's the key for me very much when I'm working with a client is actually listening to them, because I think very much I highly respect the medical profession for what they do. I think it's fantastic. However, I also think there's more room for the type of work we do, because more often than not, my job is about listening to what a client tells me. And hearing it from their point of view, because they're the expert on themselves. So they will tell you their pathology and tell you where they're struggling, just if you listen hard enough. And a lot of sort of, especially the adults, and I think it's because over time, every time you're told something, you take it on board, and if it's negative and positive, sometimes we can suppress these. So by adult life, something that we were slightly annoyed about when we were younger becomes sort of absolute rage at the system almost, because for all of their life they've felt as though they've been told that there's something wrong with them and they can't achieve perhaps what they dream of achieving. They may not necessarily have the lifestyle because they won't have the job they wish for. And actually, the one thing that my clients have said is the best thing is dealing with the trauma around being told that there's something wrong with them. And the moment they were told that there was something wrong with them, it's not like they consciously limited themselves, but ultimately that's what happens. If you tell a child that they can't do something, some will be defiant and say, watch this, and go off and do it. And that's what I would like every autistic child to do. But most of them will take it on board and take it for gospel and go through their lives thinking that they can never be the person they dream of being because they have a condition or they have something wrong with them. And especially I've been working with a lady with Asperger's, and for so many years and years, she's limited herself and told herself that actually she's not capable of doing a lot of things and that she needs help and she needs support. And this is pretty much just what she's been told by doctors and family and that sort of thing. And actually, from the experience that I've seen with this client, she's more than capable of doing anything on her own. She's more than capable of living a fantastic life, and there are no limits for her now because she believes that she can do anything. And to be able to help a person find that confidence within themselves, for me, it is priceless. It's why I do the work, because it's for years she's felt like a prisoner of her own mind because she's been telling herself stories around what she's been told. And she's realized that the limiting thing in her life is not the Asperger's itself, it's the story she's been told around it. Large groups, difficult to handle socially and that sort of thing. But she's coming to more and more of my group sessions. So again, each time says that it comes to a group session, it's like, would you have done that 6 months ago? And the answer is no. And then you see the smile and she lights up. There's another thing I've done that I never thought I would. And so, especially within the adults, I've noticed that the limiting thing in them is not the condition itself, it's what they're told about it. Because obviously, if you sat there in front of a medical profession, they've studied their field, they've obviously qualified, they're intelligent people, and we take the words for gospel. And a lot of the time, it's what we tell ourselves that creates the result. That for me is the best thing about my job is the feedback I get from clients of how they've moved themselves forwards. And actually, yes, they're well aware that they still may have a difficulty in a certain area. However, their confidence level has gone through the roof, and actually that allows them to do a lot more than they realised they were capable of. And also, obviously, we all know that some people find that visual learning is the way that they learn and how they gain the most amount of information. Obviously, you've got oral. I'm slightly oral stroke kinesthetic, so if it's spoken to me, I find it goes in a lot easier. And obviously, getting hands-on and actually doing a practical thing, I've always found that's how I learn to read and write, read and put things down. I just find that slightly more difficult than the oral kinesthetic. And again, I think this is really important for when you've got an Asperger's condition or autism. It's learning how can that child or that adult learn what's best for them. And I think that's obviously some of the difficulty, as Penny was saying, when she was at school, and obviously when I was at school, there wasn't any knowledge around a lot of these things. I mean, dyslexia was used when I was at school, and there was some understanding around that, but autism and Asperger's, there was just didn't seem to be any awareness or knowledge around the spectrum. And I think it's obviously some of them are going to learn differently. So it's just it's about us learning, not the ones with a condition. It's how can we best help them to learn? Because actually they could teach us a lot about learning themselves.
It's very much around, oh, hello, we're going into the break. So we'll talk about this a little bit more later.
A conscious lifestyle for a mindful life. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. Om Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single Om Times endeavor. Host your show with Om Times Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on?
We are talking about your life. Ever wonder, is this as good as it gets? No, it could be so much better. At Acorn to Oak, we know you are seeking more happiness, joy, unconditional love, financial freedom, passion, and purpose. Find your unique mojo and live an extraordinary life. Want to know more? Contact us at our website, acorntooak.org.uk.
Long ago, you wouldn't think of galloping on a horse while doing calligraphy, and you wouldn't have attempted to ride your bike while typing a letter. Yet you think you can safely operate a multi-ton vehicle while texting? Behind the wheel is no place to multitask. If you want to BRB, drive now and text later. Lives depend on it.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
So we're back again. Just before the break, I was going to start talking about sensory sensitivities and, you know, some of the medical issues such as gastrointestinal disorders. And just reminding people that, you know, sometimes it's because the neurons in our body are hypersensitive, you know, sensory sensitive. So obviously we're talking about sight and smell and hearing and kinesthetic, as Matthew mentioned. And an awful lot of autistic kids don't like to be approached, don't like to be touched. They find being in a really bright room quite overwhelming. Different smells they can get worried about or become upset around. The senses are really quite heightened. And as I said, with the medical issues like GI disorders, we need to remember we've got just as many neurons in the gut as we do in our brains and obviously in our hearts. So these disorders, when we're talking about sleep disorders or seizures, it's because of the hypersensitivity. And it's finding different ways of calming that hypersensitivity down. And as you know, I'm a homeopath, and homeopathy, I would seriously say to any parent who is helping a child overcome hypersensitivity to investigate homeopathy and look at homeopathy. And the, you know, one of the great tools of homeopathy is Hypericum, which is actually St. John's wort in potency. And, you know, look at homeopathy, look about, you know, Google it, get on it, find our local homeopath who will also, all homeopathy will help with the seizures, the sleep disorders, the anxiety, the depression, and the attention issues, as well as looking into breath work and breath for life breath work. But homeopathy is something that is very gentle and just nudges and nudges and nudges your own homeostasis. In other words, it gets you back into balance. And an awful lot of these disorders of hypersensitivity are, you know, they could have a genetic input, and they definitely have environmental factors, you know, that contribute to the hypersensitivity. And it's the whole organism has gone into hypersensitivity. And usually it's because, and I say usually, and obviously there's always exceptions to the rule, it's because energetically the child has not really grounded well into their physical body. And because of that, they're out of alignment. And because of that, they keep on getting pushed and shoved by all of this sensory input that is coming into them, and they just don't know or don't have strategies in place in order for them to process it well. And I have found this in my own life when I was going through recovery from a stroke, and my whole brain, for want of another way of putting it, was inflamed and in trauma. And I can remember one journey. It was near Christmas time, and it was about 2.5 months past the time I had the stroke. And I got into the car with my husband to drive for 3 hours down to our relatives in Cornwall, and literally had to keep my eyes closed. I couldn't watch or look or even begin to take on board the bombardment we all have from this sensory input. And because we were driving, it was changing rapidly and all the time. And it felt like my brain, I either needed to close my eyes and close down, or my brain was going to explode because of all of the information. And this is very much where autism or the ASD disorder, the people who are suffering from this feel that way. They're constantly on hyper alert, in fight or flight. It's aggravation plus, plus, plus. And everything, you know, that was such a brilliant a quote or description from that lad who Matthew works with, of, you know, there are 100 things open, and you're taking information through those 100 different portals. And normally in normal people, and I hate to use that quote, normal people only may have 1 or 2 open. And you can imagine the overload of information just and trying to process that. And, you know, no wonder these people have sleep disorders, because they're trying to catch up with all of the things that they have taken on board and are still trying to process when they're, you know, it's quiet time at night time. And you can imagine with that amount of information, you know, the amount of information will send people into hurry, worry, and they will, you know, their whole nervous system cannot take anymore. So they will have seizures. And you can totally understand why. And, you know, again, you know, mental health challenges, I look at that and go, melt it. You know, if you're taking on board that information at such a speed, you know, of course you're going to be anxious. Of course you're going to be worried. Of course, the only way to try and deal with this stuff is to numb yourself out to such a degree so that you don't have to feel it and you don't have to worry about it. And becoming depressed, depression is suppression. So you suppress all of the information because you just can't handle it anymore. And you're looking at it and going, you know, no wonder these people have, you know, try, you know, the best thing that they can possibly do is have some peace and quiet in their own brains. And teaching them just to take a breath, teaching them that it's okay to be anxious. It's okay to feel depressed, and talking to them. And this is the most important thing, you know, the point I picked up from Matthew is, you know, the way he handles it is to listen to them, giving them a voice to what they are actually dealing with on a daily, you know, and sometimes it's minute by minute, I'm sure. But how are they, and helping them gain strategies to actually, you know, one of the cases I had was very much helping someone to be able to put it into chunks of information. You know, this is your family, this is school, this is your relationship, because the person did martial arts, you know, that's the relationship to that. And then helping them establish a link that actually brought them all together, but they could close the door on anyone at any given time so that they could manage the information. So it's an amazing, huge subject. And, you know, we would love to keep this conversation going. So we invite you to get in contact with us and ask us questions and share your experiences, because people just don't talk about these subjects. They brush them under the carpet. And it's really important that people start having a healthy with some of the problems and the issues that they face in their daily lives, instead of allowing them to feel like they're disconnected or there is no help or support there. So handing back to Matthew in the last 5 minutes so that he can also put his take on this.
Yeah, thanks, Penny. There was sort of one more point I wanted to get to, because it's something that's been mentioned to me a couple of times, and it's only really when I sat down and thought, how would that be for me, especially with autism. There's a tendency for them to think things are very black and white, and so. I've got a good friend of mine, he's got a daughter with autism, and I heard him say she just doesn't understand because she sees things in black and white. And the question I got in my head is she not understanding, or is he not understanding? Because things, when you see things in black and white, it's very, well, it's either truthful or it's dishonest. The door's either open or it's closed. And growing up in the world that we live in, there's so many contradictions to the truth. And there's a lot of do what I say, not what I do. And these contradictions, someone with autism sees these contradictions, where it sees someone telling them something and then going off and doing something else, it confuses them. They can't understand why that person is doing that behavior or saying that, because there's words but there's no action to follow it up. And I think this is where autistic children, I think a lot of the reason people have problems with them being black and white is because they're too honest, especially within a society. They say it how it is. And obviously in certain situations that it can come across as inappropriate and that sort of thing. But I think in many ways, the reason people without autism find it challenging is because they're being challenged on what they're saying. So that's why I take the route of listening to a client, because I have a certain amount of knowledge around medical stuff, but I'm no expert. My expertise is in emotional intelligence and within the subconscious mind, and how to work within that space. And I think when you tell them that they're actually they're right, they see a lot of the things they're seeing, that is the truth. They relax and actually realize, again, this is something that they struggle with, but it's actually a good thing. And just because people seem to have an issue with it, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't sort of say it. We all have to learn when to be appropriate, and that's part of growing up and this, that, and the other. But it is sort of telling the truth. And that's why when a client comes to me, they're so used to just being talked to and being told what to say and what to do and what they should be feeling, that when I give them an open space and I'm like, so what is autism to you? How does it affect your life? How does it make you feel on a day-to-day basis? The fact that I'm asking them for their opinion surprises them for a start. One of them asked me, why are there so many questions about what I feel and what I think? Am I that important? And I said, you know, you know yourself better than anybody else, and you also know how you can improve yourself. It's just if we listened enough, we can help them to improve. So I think for me, the key has been listening. So thank you very much for listening this evening.
Yeah, thank you for listening this evening, and I hope you enjoyed the show. As I said, you know, it would be really great to get some feedback, and if you've got any questions,
yeah, absolutely,
or if you'd like to share anything, please feel free to do that, and we'll see you next week, and enjoy your week. Take care now. Bye.